rabbinic law in the ideal state is a little more civilized than other laws. And it went ahead and moved on one of the two biggest fallacies. If I have to divorce my wife of my own free will and consent, the Talmud in the times of Hillel and Shammai discuss, what if you take and you salt my food excessively, and as a result, I get sick, I have a right to divorce you. That's theoretical. You honestly think that the Talmud is going to let man get away with that? In a fit of anger or insanity, just go ahead and say, that's it? No way. Now you go back to the Kesuba. Now you understand why the Kesuba was an entirely financial document. If you want to do such thing, you'll pay through the nose. And if you're not ready to pay through the nose, you'll have to compromise some which way. The second fallacy, which it moved on, was the one, I divorce you by my own free will and consent. There is a famous situation of the Rambam. What if a husband does not want to divorce his wife? She becomes in the tragic state of an aguna, hands tied, feet tied, she can't go anywhere. Rambam writes, you take that person and you jail him. And you beat the living daylights out of him, ad sheyomar, until he says, rotzeh ani, my own free will and consent, I'm going to get divorced. How is it possible? How is it possible? The guy is bloody from the stripes that you just gave him. You take a whip and you knock the living daylights out of it, and he yells, all right, I want, I want. How is that your own free will and consent? One of the most interesting statements that I've ever come across in the Rambam. If you ever want to see it in the original, I'll show it to you. So the Jew intrinsically, deep down, is all good. It's just that the crust makes him a tough nut. And when, like, you want to get at the nut, the fruit, the inside, you have to break the shell. I have to crack this tough nut. And when he yells, Rotsani, I want, there it is. That's the essence. That's the essence. However, since you haven't empowered me to knock the living daylights out of any recalcitrant husband who doesn't want to go ahead, there is the fallacy outside of Israel. In Israel, I can arrest him. In Israel, I have a warrant out for two men. One wanted by Interpol, and one wanted by me. And the courts in Israel, when they will catch up with him, will go ahead and arrest him until he is ready to grant the divorce. But this is not Israel, you see. I have another authority, not a higher authority. I have another authority that I have to worry about. So thank God, you women got your act together. And in Flatbush they established, and with this I would like to rest my case and let's hear from you. In Flatbush they established an organization called GET, G-E-T, GET Equitable Treatment. The organization does nothing more than cooperates with an international network of rabbis and communal leaders in making sure that if there is a husband who doesn't want a grant to get, we will go to such incredible extremes to be able to, an international communally based agency that will simply put the pressures on. As recently as 4 weeks ago from tonight, as we speak, there was a massive demonstration on Coney Island Avenue in the heart of Flatbush in front of a store where it was completely advertised that there would be a communal demonstration, that this fellow refused, after orders from the Beit Din, to grant a divorce. And people picketed all day, every day.
Yes, Ben.
People would call the business to say, is the strike over? What strike? Well, you know, is it over? And they would hang up. Every shul in Flatbush paraded around a picture of an individual. It was not this individual. There was an ad that was placed, in this case, it was in the Jewish Week. His employer was contacted. His name was published. His address was published. And finally, communal pressure was such that he was going to just go off of his mind. Do I have pity on him? I don't think so. Take this case. March 20, which is, as I said, a separate case from this Coney Island Avenue one, but so typically parallel. March 81, the couple is married in Israel. April 81, the couple leaves Israel and comes to New York. A couple of months later, February of 82, the couple is separated, so the wife returns to Israel alone to her family. July of 82, the wife seeks a get in Tel Aviv. Beis Din in Tel Aviv contacts the husband in New York, but to no avail. A year later, August of 83, the get organization receives requests for assistance from the wife to obtain a get from her husband. A year and several months pass, and there's still no get. October of 84, a seiruv, a document, a rabbinic document, which testifies to the refusal of the husband to appear before a Beis Din, is issued, which is a serious matter. Because when a seiruv is slapped against you, by right you are in cherem, excommunicated. I have no right to talk to you, I have no right to do business with you, and you have no right to talk to me. I have to shun you. The get organization believed that the failure on the part of the husband to respond to the Beis Din summons should be publicly denounced as halachically incorrect and morally and socially reprehensible. That is the latest response, that is, who knows how many decades late, to this insanity. Now, the insanity is called simple blackmail.
That's simple the reverse situation.
Mm-hmm. But let me just stay on the blackmail issue for one moment. She was the daughter of a Venezuelan magnate who came from Europe before the war. Millionaire. Caracas. He was from England, whose parents also were from Eastern Europe before the war. They married here in New York.
Is there another case you're talking about?
Different case, yeah. Yeah, just on the black man. Married in New York. A few weeks after the marriage, he goes ahead and contacts his father-in-law in Caracas, Venezuela. I am walking out on your daughter. Should you desire to ever see me again so that your daughter doesn't remain in Aguna, you have a week to deposit $10 million in a Swiss bank account in my name. What in my name, my number, whatever. Ten, that is the true figure. Both sides of the family converged with lawyers in New York. Heard this from the attorney who was involved on behalf of the wife. It was at the time of the Iranian hostage crisis. That year, they met in a hotel in New York, one family and their legal staff on one floor, the other family and their legal staff on a floor below. And there was shuttle diplomacy. $10 million, no way. The bride's, the wife's attorney was a very fine Jewish woman, a matrimonial attorney, who begged the father not to give a penny. The long and the short of it was that the father himself negotiated down to $1 million, which he was ready to pay. The attorney broke down in tears that this was justice prostituted to its greatest conception. She begged the father not to pay the $1 million. It's blackmail. And the father turned to her and said, "Do you know what it means to be a hostage?" She says, "No." Can you imagine what the families of the Iranian hostages are going through now? Yes. Don't you think that any one of those families will pay $1 million for the release of their loved ones? I am a hostage. My daughter has to be freed. And the skunk got away with $1 million.
Was that a planned thing, would you say?
No question. No question. So, you see, now, religious, not religious, get, no get. It was obviously a blackmail scheme. I don't want to hear any one of you telling me, well, the system stinks. You know why? Because in American law, if she decided that he's not around, even with annulments and everything, it would be so difficult. She would still be tied. A new bride, just married. If you have it, you would use the money to get rid of this bound situation, this incredible stricture.
Which comes first, the divorce or the get, or are they simultaneous when one is seeking it?
Legally.
I mean the procedures.
Okay, legally, the get has absolutely no meaning whatsoever in common law. Halachically, I am bound to recognize the fact that she must have a civil divorce and he must grant a civil divorce, so to speak.
Before you pursue the case?
Before, during, or after.
Oh, okay.
Whatever the case may be. You see, there's only one problem with the get being done before the civil action. Remember you just read here that you are completely free to marry any person? There are impediments, however, if you don't have the civil divorce. Okay? So, what we do is we write the get before, the Besdin holds it, and grants its final status when the civil divorce comes through. Questions?
What was Marion's? What if it's reversed? What if the wife will give the man the divorce? But she doesn't give it, he gives it. But
No. She must... Since the 10th century, she must consent to it. She must consent to accept it. Halacha in general always wants a balance and will build into any procedure a counterbalance if things are too one-sided. She must consent to it, and if she does not consent to it, her reasons had better be incredibly strong, because if she doesn't present those strong reasons, then I will go to 99 other rabbis and show them why halachically the husband should not be bound by this recent decree that it is only one man to one woman. We'll do it the Sephardic way, the Yemenite way, where one man was allowed up until 1948 to marry three women if necessary. We'll do it Avraham Avinu's way. He married two. We'll do it Yaakov's way. He married four. Okay? It's called Heter Meir Rabboni. And it's used not commonly, but it is certainly around. What if she cannot accept? She, let's say as a result of a pregnancy, no longer is mentally capable of functioning, or whatever the case may be, as a result of a car accident. She's no longer capable of consenting and participating in it.
What, the get of the marriage?
Either or. Okay? So it is a dispensation, is a heter meir rabboni. And that gives me the balance, that she cannot blackmail him.
Doesn't sound fair, though.
In what way?
It seems that he gets... You knock yourself out, so he should give a get, but not for her to accept it. It doesn't seem balanced to me.
Oh no! If she refuses to accept, I have a way. I I tell her I don't need your acceptance anymore.
Yeah, but you know, you can't tell him that.
No, I can.
I don't mean that. I mean, if he refuses to give, you're not saying it to him.
No.
So it's not just.
Yeah, it's not just because society doesn't allow me to go ahead and implement what I really can. What is a society? It is a society called Golis outside of Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. There is no such thing as a husband not wanting. You don't want, you'll sit in jail until you want. If the court has determined that there should be a divorce, there are grounds for divorce, there's no way to go ahead and have any kind of reconciliation, you don't want to give a divorce, you'll sit as long as is necessary. I don't think you want to sit in a jail full of criminals and drug addicts just because you're going to hold out and blackmail. Sooner or later, and sooner than later, you are going to give in. But you have you. Society has tied my hands. Let me do my job, and I'll go ahead and do it. Simple as that.
What if he's in a coma?
Oy, we got SARS. We truly, truly have SARS because of a legal technicality. There is no legal system that is perfect. I don't know of any. We truly have SARS.
Well, in a case like that, wouldn't someone be declared incompetent and a guardian set up?
Yeah, but unlike common law, the rights of a guardian in halacha are not the same as the rights in common law. There are certain things that have to be instituted by the principal and the principal only, without power of attorney. And then we go looking for all other kinds of technicalities. All right? A woman who's married for 30 years and her husband absconds on her 30 years ago, we can't find him. And she's an aguna for 30 years. And I succeed in convincing with evidence from Moshe Feinstein that the wedding was no wedding to begin with. All right? I got a technicality on the first two witnesses. You remember I made a whole big deal about the witnesses? Mm-hmm.
But that was 30 years later.
She didn't know me 30 years before. It would have been a heck of a lot easier 30 years before. Because then the rabbi, so-called, who performed the wedding, could have been openly identified as a man who never kept Shabbos. Simple. That's a technicality. I love him just as much. He's a Jew by me. He can say all the sermons as he wants. But in terms of testimony, as a witness, I have a technicality. And isn't life, isn't court life, just a bunch of technicalities?
The witness isn't the Shomer Shabbos.
Technicality. It's not no good. Mm-hmm. Okay? Then, can you imagine, I want you to extrapolate now. If the rabbi of the congregation already 30, 35 years ago was not Shomer Shabbos, the witnesses he took to use on the Kesubah were probably more observant than he was, right? No, you're wrong. You see, because the members of a shul are only more observant than the rabbi in a young Israel. You see, in any other shul, the rabbi sits as the pinnacle of observance.
Are you saying, therefore, that all... not
Orthodox.
No, Reform. All Reform weddings are not halakhically recognized.
Am I saying this? Question was answered. Asked 1,000 times over Moshe Feinstein. It's been asked in the last 100 years.
The
Okay. I'm giving you the theoretical answer. Theoretically, there is a technical fallacy with all these weddings. Now watch what we do with the technical fallacy. Did they live as husband and wife? Did they raise children? No question about it. So we have to look, weigh this against this technical abuse of witnesses. So if they're not getting divorced, leave them alone. The problem is when I have to invoke that technicality. So let's say it was a Reform such wedding, with witnesses who didn't know what was coming off. Probably there was no kesuba written. Yeah, there may be family and children, there are no two ways about it. But now she suddenly becomes hung up. Aguna. And he doesn't want to give a divorce. From a technical point of view.
She doesn't need to
give a divorce. Oh. Now watch that. Oh, you see?
Yeah.
It is a technicality which the halacha builds in to be able to give some kind of balance to the underdog. But what do I do here? And this is the case that brought me to have met Rav Moshe Feinstein to begin with. She married a convert to Yiddishkeit. It so happened to be that when he converted years before, one of the three who were involved in that Beis Din of conversion was none other than a fellow than Rabbi Morris Wasserman. He so happens to be my father. They didn't know one another, and I didn't know this. But then this woman pops up in the very first shul at which I was associated with 26 years ago and tells me that her convert husband leaves her with a 7-year-old child going to the Bronx Lubavitcher Yeshiva. He went off to Mexico, got himself one of these 24-hour divorces, and remarried in church. Question. Was his conversion a true conversion? I open up Moshe Feinstein's book and he says, look, well, you see these shenanigans, you know that a priori from the very beginning, this wasn't a convert. It may have been a Reuben Barnum and Bailey Circus kind of thing. It's not a convert. Nothing, and forget about it. It was no marriage, it was no chuppah, it was nothing. So, if it's nothing, do you need a get? No. 7-8 lines, that was it. I called him up, not ever having spoken to him before, and just to substantiate. And I told him the case just as I told you. He says, she needs a get. I said, I don't understand it, you're right. He says, Ingeman, you want to talk to me about it? Come down and I'll explain the whole thing. I was all of 20 and some months. That's it. I still had a way to go to 21. And he says, look, here is the halacha. And it's a simple halacha. Do we want people to say that she has remarried without a get? No. You know why? Because you know what people are like. They're not going to talk about her. They'll finish with her. The world will know, ironically, that she married without a get, therefore her children are mamzerim, they're illegitimate. Simple. We don't want such things. So that even where technically a get is not necessary, we go ahead and we try to get a get. So that people shouldn't say that she went ahead and remarried without a get. But you're giving me this technicality, the husband can't even be caught by Interpol, or the husband will not give a get. In this case, this immediate case, the husband's not going to give a get because he's in Mexico. So, what am I going to do? Take this woman and hang her up for the rest of her life? Well, I gave you two different cases. The one in Mexico, I stood where the guy gave a get. He didn't care. Nice guy. He gave her a get. Finished. The one, however, who was hung up for 30 years, we still don't know where the husband is. We do know that Interpol is looking for him. We do know that he is wanted in Queens District Court for bigamy. Okay? Case to file. They're not doing anything with it. And several other international crimes. That's it. But the element is, I have balance. In a case where it's not fair, Marion, you're right. The only time it's not fair is when I cannot beat the living daylights out of a husband who doesn't want to give again. And that is not my fault. Oh boy, would I love to use what I learned in my youthful years, taught to me by my dear childhood friend, Meir Kahana. Oh, would I love that.
But they do that. They have people that beat them up in Brooklyn.
I don't know from such people.
Yeah.
I never heard of such things. I never heard of such things.
No,
you're dreaming.
Right.
You're dreaming. I never heard of such things.
No, they took them in the alley somewhere.
Oh, you must have read some kind of science fiction.
Yeah, sure, they take care of them.
Now, what we really need is this whole session augmented by the chief of all chiefs. She probably can tell us untold numbers of stories. How long is your mother at that office? 20 years? Okay? A couple of stories that I tell you, which can put your hair on end, has got to be, you know, has got to be increased by, she probably sees in a day what I see in a lifetime. Simple as that. Incredible. 20 years to be able to amass all kinds of situations.
Does it always go through that office?
No, it's one of the biggest. One of the biggest.
But
several offices.
No. That office just handles guests, or
no.
Just not other. They don't hear other kinds of.
They hear, yes. But
yeah,
it's
their veterans call for an alternative.
I understand.
Because people want to have a business.
But she just handles this.
She's basically involved with the.
That's the get authority.
Oh yeah, that was a big one. Many gitin when I was in the NCSY office, and the offices then were next door, one to another. Every other day I was part of the proceedings. I had to call in. I was either the third judge or the witness or whatever.
Or they just pull someone that's knowledgeable.
I knew. If I didn't know, they wouldn't have called. They have on call.
They have cell phone on call.
Yep.
Because sometimes you suddenly get a guy to show up.
Mm.
You've got to grab him. You may never see him for another 27 years.
Shall I tell you how you got to grab? You see the get that you're holding? The wife refused to come. The wife was not present. And so the Bet Din went ahead and empowered me as Shaliach to be the husband's agent, power of attorney, to get the wife whenever and wherever. Months and months and months she refused to come. This get was written at the time that I had an office at 565 Broadway. All of a sudden, 12:30 during lunch, she shows up with her mother. I need the get. I don't carry it around in my hip pocket. I have it here in a file. I need a Beis Din of three Rabbonim. Rabbi Bobrovsky is about ready to go, and the other two have other duties. That was Claver, and I forget the other one.
Sebi?
No, I don't remember.
I think it was Sebi.
It
was the other.
Yeah,
maybe.
But no, it may have been someone else. Where do I go?
Here.
Yeah, where do I go ahead?
Schwartz.
Schwartz.
May have been Schwartz, yes. Yeah, Schwartz, that was it. Where do I go ahead and pin this woman down? With her mother there, I'm lost. If I don't give it 1, 2, 3, I'm finished. It so happened to be that one of my sons borrowed my car in the middle of the day, and he took my keys. And I did not have a key to my house. I borrowed Rabbi Dahan's car. Came speeding down in the hope that there was a window open. All of the windows were locked. And so I went into my garage and I got myself a rake and I walked over to that front door, and without even thinking twice, I just simply broke that glass on the front door and opened up from inside, grabbed the get, left everything the way it was, ran and held Kangaroo Court and gave
somebody
it
came home and thought there was a break.
Leah came home and was absolutely flabbergasted. She could not understand what kind of a brazen crook would leave the object of sin right there, probably with all the fingerprints on it. The place looked totally in order. Nothing more than the front glass smashed right through. Nothing is missing. How she had the audacity to even go into the house and look through is just unreal. She now wonders at herself. And then about 2:30, when everything was quieted down, I called her and said, you know, I forgot to tell you, Leah, I had to break into the house. Give up.
So call the police.
That's another get story. That
What's
was
the
delivery
story
of
the shoe? You really have to throw a shoe?
It has nothing to do with a get.
Oh,
absolutely nothing to do with a get. Chalitza is totally different. Forget about that.
But isn't it
nothing
to
do with a get? Not. There is no relationship whatsoever. None whatsoever.
Well, it's funny. A friend of mine was divorced and said it was done at the time of the get.
There is no get if you have chalitza. These are mutually exclusive kinds of things.
This was an Orthodox rabbi that did this.
These are, I'm telling you that they are two separate things. We can discuss chalitza as something separate, but let me just give you it quickly. Number one, a marriage terminates in only two ways. Upon divorce, meaning that the two principals remain alive. Or secondly, upon death, meaning that one remains alive and the other one doesn't. That's it. Mm-hmm. One of the two.
Does that mean you prove that the person's dead?
Well, that's so, you know. I'm giving it to you straight and just the chapter headings. There is a technicality, however. The Torah, in realizing that womanhood had to be taken care of, never having anticipated freedom of women that we had, the mobility that we have today, said that if a young groom dies and the widow is childless, one of his brothers has got to go ahead and provide for her. If for whatever reason the brother can't provide for her, there can't be a get, but there has to be some kind of severance ceremony. There can't be a get because a get is only by the one who signed a ksuba. Now the brother who is dead cannot give a get. The brother who is alive, why should he give a get? He never married her. It is only by circumstances that he is bound to her. Now he cannot go ahead and marry her. For whatever reason.
She's three.
Okay? For whatever reason. This was the case with Boaz and Ruth. Boaz was not the next relative in line in the family of Naomi to go ahead and marry Ruth. But he indicated that he was going to go ahead and take her after the others refused. But what if he couldn't take her? Then there is the issue of chalitza. And chalitza means to divest yourself. You have a responsibility. It is a responsibility that you didn't ask for. You didn't plan on it. Neither you, the bride, nor you, the brother. Nonetheless, we're family and we have to do something. If I can go ahead and do it, fine and well. I will marry you. But if not, I must show society that these responsibilities that we have to one another have got to be severed. But I'm not going to use the same thing as a get, because a get is only the thing that severs a kesuba. And we don't have a kesuba yet. You were saying?
I'm listening.
All right. Okay. We will somehow get our expert to continue.
Okay, one, the get.